Welcome to Torah Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rivka Kahan, and I'm excited to learn Sefer Bamidbar with you. Today we'll be learning Parshas Maaseh. One of the last sections of Sefer Bamidbar is about the halachic commands associated with establishing Arei Miklat, cities of refuge to which an accidental killer is meant to escape. There are also discussions of Arei Miklat in two other places in the Torah, briefly in Parshas Mishpatim, and later in Parshas Shoftim. It's intuitively understandable why Arei Miklat are discussed in Mishpatim and Shoftim, which deal with aspects of the legal system in detail. But what is their relevance to the end of Sefer Bamidbar? Professor Yonatan Grossman suggests that the purpose of the discussion of Arei Miklat here in our Parsha is not really related to the legal system, but to the appropriate establishment of the land of Eretz Yisrael, both geographically, with relation to its borders and the delineation of its cities, and morally, in terms of its ethical character. The Arei Miklat are meant to represent and preserve the values on which Eretz Yisrael is built. The section about Arei Miklat in our Parsha concludes with the pasuk, V'lo titamei et ha'aretz asher atem yoshvim ba, asher ani shochin betocha, ki ani Hashem shochin betoch b'nei Yisrael. You shall not defile the land where you live, in which I, Hashem, dwell, because I, Hashem, dwell among B'nai Yisrael. This pasuk expresses that the establishment of Arei Miklat here in Parshas Maaseh is related to the theme of the holiness and purity of the land of Israel, which does not tolerate the immorality of murder. However, as we'll see as we interpret the psukim, it's not entirely clear to which kind of bloodshed the pasuk is referring. Let's try to understand these psukim and the general institution of Arei Miklat more deeply by comparing and contrasting this section in our Parsha to the one in Parsha Shoftim, since these are the two that include the most extensive treatments of Arei Miklat in the Torah. In our Parsha, the Torah goes into detail about what constitutes unintentional versus intentional murder, and then describes a legal process through which v'shaftu ha'eda bein hamakeh uvein goel hadam, al ha-mishpatim ha'ela. The congregation shall judge between the killer and the blood avenger to apply all of these statutes. The congregation is then responsible to bring the killer to the Arei Miklat, where he must remain until the Kohen Gadol dies. In the section later in Sefer Devarim, there's no discussion of this legal process and the involvement of the congregation in applying the laws of the Arei Miklat. Instead, the emphasis is on the protection offered from the Goel Hadam, the blood avenger. The pasuk says, "Pen yerdof goel hadam acharei harotzeach ki yecham levavo v'hisigo ki yerbe haderech v'hikahu nefesh v'lo ein mishpat mavet ki lo sonehu lo mitmos shilshom." Lest the goel hadam pursue the killer because his heart is enraged and overtake him because the way is long and kill him, even though he was not deserving of death because he had not hated his victim previously. These two different emphases in the two parshiot on the legal process of being sent to an Arei Miklat in Parshat Maaseh and on the Arei Miklat as a haven from the Goel Hadam in Parshat Shoftim highlight two different aspects of the purpose of the Arei Miklat that have been developed by Mefarshim and thinkers throughout the ages. I should point out that the idea of the Arei Miklat as a haven from the Goel Hadam does also appear in Parshat Maaseh, but nonetheless, the emphasis in Parshas Maaseh is more on the legal process, whereas in Parshas Shoftim, it's more on the rage of the Goel Hadam and the need to protect the accidental killer from him. Some Mefarshim, like the Rambam and Abarbanel, focus on the halachos of Arei Miklat as a protection for the accidental murderer, more along the lines of the focus in Sefer Devarim, and as a moral responsibility of the community. In the words of the Abarbanel, "V'omnam ma she'amar lo yishafech dam hanaki bekerav artecha hu dam haroteach bishgaga shelo yahargehu goel hadam v'im lo ta'ase hashmira hazot yiya alecha damim rotel lamar she'af al pi she'atah lo tahrog yeichashev ki ilu atah haragta v'shafachta damim kivan shelo hivdalta ha'arim asher behem timana ha'hariga ha'hi meharoteach bishgaga." The Abarbanel says, when the Torah says you shall not spill innocent blood in your land, this refers to the blood of the accidental killer, that the Goel Hadam should not kill him. And if you as a community don't carry out this protection, his blood will be on you. Meaning to say that even though you didn't actually kill him, it will be considered as if you did, and you spilled his blood, since you didn't separate these cities of refuge that would prevent this killing of the accidental murderer. In the eyes of the Abarbanel, among some other Mefarshim, the main purpose of the City of Refuge is as protection and as a haven. And not only that, but it's the moral responsibility of the community to offer that protection. While the Abarbanel doesn't say this explicitly, I think that one could interpret the concluding psukim of the section that we read earlier, which say that the land should not be polluted with blood, as referring not to the original killing, but to the potential death of the accidental murderer. If the community doesn't build Arei Miklat, doesn't take responsibility for offering protection, they will be responsible for the accidental killer's unjustified murder by the Goel Hadam. Other Mefarshim view the institution of Arei Miklat quite differently, as a punishment of exile meted out by the legal system, more along the lines of Parshat Maaseh, which allows the accidental murderer to achieve atonement. This is the view taken by Chazal, particularly in Maseches Makos, as well as by a number of Mefarshei HaMikra. As the Sforno says, Ela shemegalgalin chova al yedei chayav, v'samti lecha mamkom asher yanus, lechaper avono begaluto. The Sforno says, guilt comes upon the guilty, and I, Hashem, have established a place to which he can escape to atone for his sin through exile. In other words, the Sforno is assuming that even if a killing was unintentional and not punishable as murder, it may still reflect a moral deficit in the person who committed the act and still requires atonement. The Sforno also makes the intriguing suggestion that the reason that there isn't a set period of time associated with the sentence of galut is that there are different gradations of intentionality and unintentionality, as even accidental actions may include some element of intent. For that reason, the sentence is tied to the death of the Kohen Gadol and not to a particular number of years, because there is no one appropriate sentence for all unintentional murders. The death of the Kohen Gadol is in Hashem's hands, who alone knows the heart of man and can determine the appropriate length of exile for each act of accidental killing. According to this view, the closing psukim of the section, which speak about the pollution of the land through the spilling of blood, are referring to the act of accidental murder. All spilling of blood pollutes the land, and even acts that are not legally punishable may include some degree of guilt, because of the principle that guilt comes upon one who deserves it, or because even accidental behaviors may include some degree of subconscious intent, or simply because the loss of a human being is a tragedy and a travesty, no matter whether it was purposeful or not. This notion is compelling not only on a moral, but on a psychological level. There was an incredibly powerful article published in 2017 in The New Yorker called The Sorrow and Shame of the Accidental Killer. This article probes the feelings of several people who caused other people's deaths accidentally, without malice and even without negligence. Accidents took place that were beyond their control. The article explores how a person's life can be shaped by heavy, relentless shame, even in the absence of guilt. Fascinatingly, one of the people interviewed in the article, who was involved in a car accident that killed another person, speaks about how personally impacted she was by learning about the institution of Arei Miklat. I'm going to quote now from the article, which says, "In the book of Numbers, God instructs Moses to tell the Israelites that they are to designate 6 cities of refuge so that anyone who kills someone inadvertently may flee there. The accidental murderer will be protected from the wrath of the blood avenger, a family member of the deceased. The rules are spelled out in detail," and here the article goes on to enumerate some of the rules, after which it continues, "When Marianne Gray, a secular Jew who grew up celebrating Easter and Christmas and reserving Scarsdale tennis courts on the high holidays, first learned of the concept of cities of refuge, she was overcome with gratitude. The Torah was talking about me," she remembers thinking. "Gray was struck by the specificity of its prescriptions, which suggested that lives like hers were once contemplated with sophistication by the highest authorities. If I had been exiled to a city of refuge, I might not have needed exile from myself," she once wrote. This article can be found linked to in the resource articles archive at alhatorah.org. Returning to our Torah texts, the reality is that it is not simple to distinguish between the different purposes of Arei Miklat. Surely Arei Miklat are a means for society to protect accidental killers from an unjustified death penalty. And at the same time, there's no simple resolution to the tragedy of an accidental death. The halachic requirement of exile and atonement is necessary both legally and existentially. I think that the different sections of the Torah that discuss Ari Miklat and their distinct emphases are an example of the way in which halacha sometimes weaves together various values that are complementary or even distinct but all true. And while one might be tempted to think of the two purposes of Ari Miklat as near opposites, either as a mechanism of mercy and compassion for the accidental killer or as a form of punishment, the reality is that those two ideas aren't so distinct from each other, as sometimes what a person seeks is a means to express his shame and atone for it. This idea of the weaving together of values in halachic sections of the Torah brings to mind the well-known pasuk from Mishpatim of ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yad tachas yad, regel tachas regel, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, and a leg for a leg. We all know that halachically, the Torah means not that we actually knock out someone's eye as a punishment for knocking out someone else's eye, but that he pay the monetary equivalent. So why does the Torah express that idea in this non-literal, potentially misleading way? It's because the Torah is conveying to us that while there are many reasons that we impose monetary fines in place of bodily damage, we still should recognize that money can never truly make up for the loss of a part of a person's body. Money can never approximate the value of any part of a human being, and we're meant to view human life with reverence, even in cases where halachically we only impose a monetary fine. May our learning of Torah always illuminate for us the deep and rich values that are woven together in its halachic sections that Hashem imparts to us, and inspire us to live by them. Shabbat Shalom.